Hello and welcome to The View From Here. This week, I'm on the beautiful North Norfolk coast, a place I love and know well. I'm at Wells next to the sea, looking out over the gently ebbing waters of the harbour. I'm with Fee Robinson, who's 15 and represents North Norfolk on the National Youth Parliament. Fee, thank you very much for joining me. Tell me, first of all, what you like about living here.
There's so many good things. I go to quite a small school, which is lovely. It's got a fantastic community. All the teachers there are lovely. All of the students there are lovely. It's a lovely place to live. It's quiet. You can go swimming or sailing in the sea. It's just got so many positive points. Mostly the community, to be honest, of just the whole area.
What made you decide to stand for the National Youth Parliament?
I wanted to get involved in politics personally because I go to high school and I saw a real disparity between the people at high school and what the government was saying. We've got new GCSE specs that just aren't being communicated. We haven't seen mock papers of the GCSEs yet. We've got people living here that can't get the transport they need to get around, and we've got a government that's looking at funding expanded programmes for older generations.
You talked there about GCSEs. You'll be taking yours in a year from now. What is the issue there?
Well, the problem that I see is our education system and our national curriculum just simply isn't fit for purpose right now. We used to have open book exams, so that meant if we were studying a text and we were expected to write about the text, we could see the book, because in reality, you're never going to be asked to remember what you're writing about off by heart. But in this new GCSE spec, we're expected to memorise 15 poems and be able to talk about any of them. We're expected to know an extensive range of quotes from three different large books. And that's just not possible. We're moving into an era of more information, not less. They should be providing us with more information in exams, not less.
Clearly, there was some quite extensive consultation before these changes were introduced. But do you think that people like yourself, who are actually going to be taking them, were sufficiently taken into account?
No, I was lucky enough to have the opportunity to go to Westminster on Monday and speak with some senior politicians. And they said there that actually MPs sometimes have a bit of an issue with always thinking they're the expert on things and forgetting to take a step back and do the consultation with the people they're going to affect. They might think, and a lot of people think, yeah, but they've been to school. But school changes, the environment changes. Your experience at school isn't going to be the same as mine, and I think it's important that we remember that, and that each generation's experience of school is going to be different, and therefore the exams and the curriculum needs to be changed to fit.
Do you think the politicians you were talking to paid sufficient heed to what you were saying? Do you think they do really listen to the voices of a younger generation?
I think they were listening. I think they all really did listen. I don't think any of them are motivated enough to take action. I think if they could have a magical wish list and do what they wanted to, our stuff would be on there. But I don't think it's a priority. And this might be from a slightly cynical point of view, but I've got to point towards the fact that we can't vote for them yet. Which means that probably if you had a group of people there who have an issue and they can vote for you, or a group of people there who have an issue and they can't vote for you, as an MP, they're probably going to go with the ones who can vote, and that's annoying.
So would you like to see the voting age reduced?
I'm conflicted on that one. I've talked to a lot of people about it. I've heard a lot of good arguments for and a lot of good arguments against. I'm not sure if lowering the voting age would be the best idea, because somebody else said, not me, if we lower it to 16, then a 15-year-old's going to be saying, oh, we want the vote. I think we need to be improving the communication between under-18s and politicians rather than just lowering the voting age.
The other issue, which I know you feel very strongly about, is mental health and ensuring that young people get the help and support that they need.
Well, I've spoken to a lot of other young people about this. This is a major issue that I won the vote on, and I've spoken to a lot of people, and it tends to be access, a lack of knowing what's going to happen. If you get referred to the mental health services, do you just descend into this world where you have no control and one thing happens after another, and does that increase your anxiety? Maybe you don't want to talk to your parents straight away about it. Maybe you just need to get that help and then start talking to your parents about it. We need those little changes that young people have said that they want, rather than what older people who aren't in our shoes say that they want.
Now, I know that you're speaking from personal experience. Tell us about what you went through and the difficulties you encountered in terms of getting the help and support you needed?
Well, first thing I did, I went on the Childline website, because a lot of people think of Childline as somewhere you can only really go if, like, you're being abused or something. It's not. It's a fantastic website, and they have this wonderful thing called a one-to-one chat feature now, which is where you can go online and literally do an online chat with a trained counsellor. I was talking to them and they were like, well, just go and see your doctor. They don't have to tell you about it. But I live in an incredibly rural area. I do not even know if there is a bus route to anywhere near my doctor's. There's not those transport links. And I know for a lot of other people, their issues are just that starting out point of, actually, I know I need some support. Where do I go now? And then once you've told someone, sometimes it can be more anxiety provoking than not, because I know when it happened with me, it was, oh, well, I'm going to have to phone your parents. And it felt like I'd just been told off. And it was like, well, I'm going to have to tell your parents about that. And it felt more like I was being told off. They didn't mean it in that way. But I was more scared and more anxious after that than I think I had been at any point before.
Now, I know that you were born as a boy, you identify as a girl. Is that something that's been widely and sympathetically understood?
Yes, and I think that's one of the great things about living in this community. It's a small community, it's incredibly supportive. My school could not have been better. If I could have created a wish list of how it would have been dealt with, my school would tick every single box. The community around school is just so incredibly supportive. So yeah, that's actually been one of the benefits of living in such a small rural community.
But you have been able to get the mental health support that you need.
Yes, I have, because I've been incredibly lucky and I have parents that can provide that for me. I have a dad that works from home, so his schedule is quite flexible, so he can take me to the places that I need to be to get that support. But a lot of the people I represent don't have that support mechanism. They don't have parents that can do that, not because they don't want to, but because their lives just don't allow for that. And I think it is part of the government's duty to be able to ensure that these children don't get overly anxious. There's an illness threshold. You have to be ill enough to be treated, because the mental health services are too underfunded to just treat everyone and anyone. But the problem is then you get people coming back, people who started and they were a bit anxious and they're feeling a bit down about school, and you get people coming back who are full-on suicidal. I've spoken to people in my area that before they got any kind of treatment or taken seriously, they ended up in hospital on a suicide attempt. That's how bad it's getting. And I don't think the government are seeing this. The government are saying, we're going to put more money into it. We're going to do this. We're going to do that. What we need is we need a change in policy. Fundamentally, early intervention needs to be more key than it is.
And is that a particular difficulty if you're somewhere like this where transport connections are not good, bus services, very sporadic?
All of that is difficult, because everything from the fact that you want to phone someone and you want to talk about them when you're not at home, then you've got to go and find somewhere you can get to with a phone signal. Something as simple as just going and having a private phone conversation could be a massive deal, because a lot of where I live does not have phone reception. Not 4G, just doesn't have phone reception. And that makes it very difficult. And with the transport links, there's a real element of a lack of privacy and a lack of independence as well. I think in this area, there are a lot of problems with mental health and stuff, because a lot of people can't get to those homework clubs or stuff that they'd like to. Our school must run throughout the course of the year 100 different after school clubs. But I know there are many people who can't go back and forth to them because the buses either don't align or they're way too expensive, and just none of those links are there.
Do you think that there is a lack of understanding amongst many politicians at Westminster of some of these very basic issues which people like yourself are dealing with every day?
Yeah, I do. And I think there's a will to listen if there's something to gain. We have local MPs for a reason, and I think there needs to be more communication with under 18s, more conversation there, and more will. Because if it's something so simple to sort, rather than avoiding that, politicians should be jumping on that and getting a quick and easy fix and a quick and easy victory. There are so many simple issues that could be fixed that haven't been yet, because people are more interested in the big, high-profile things.
And is the National Youth Parliament a good way for you to get that message across?
Yeah, I think there's two things that need to happen. There needs to be more publicity of the National Youth Parliament. Everyone in high schools across the country should know about its existence, because we are their link. The second thing is we have an annual sitting. Every year, November kind of time, we go and sit in the House of Commons, and we debate and we take issues forward to the government, various MPs. And there's been issues that have come up there year after year after year, and MPs haven't taken notice of them. Councillors have, other policymakers, schools have, but the government and MPs haven't, certainly not on a widespread scale. We need to be taken seriously, and there needs to be accountability towards young people. There needs to be, I don't want to say statutory requirement, but I would like to see a government policy that the necessary departments do at least respond to Youth Parliament's concerns.
Fee Robinson, thanks very much indeed for talking to me.
Thank you for having me.